Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, May 16th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Renner Looks to Transit Board. Open City Seats May Go to Baragas Boyd, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Mayor Terry Renner wants to appoint former Alderwoman Amelia Baragas and City Planning Commission Chairman Justin Boyd to the Connect Transit Board because, he said, they are focused on bringing a new transit center to downtown Bloomington. That decision comes as criticism of the Transit Board at public meetings has increased since its recent decision to approve fare hikes effective October 1st and the termination of the Olive Route on July 1st. To counteract those kinds of decisions, community residents have been urging Twin City mayors and councils to fill open positions on the board with people who rely on or regularly use the buses. Renner said he is not opposed to that idea and would support expanding the transit board to add more diversity. The 7-member board consists of 4 trustees appointed by Bloomington and 3 appointed by Normal. Each serves a 4-year term. Renner said he began in December working on filling 2 Bloomington vacancies, stemming from Judy Buchanan's decision to resign prior to her current term ending in 2021, and the expiration of John Bowman's term on June 30th. My mindset at that point was to get people who had strong experience so that they could hit the ground running on building a downtown transfer station for Connect Transit, said Renner. The 2 people I am recommending have served on the downtown task force and have a great deal of experience in this. The Bloomington City Council will need to confirm the appointments, which could happen next month, Renner said. Baragas Boyd and Connect Transit Board Chairman Mike McCurdy were among the backers of a controversial proposal to build a new Bloomington Public Library and Connect Transit transfer station on the site of the city's aging Market Street parking deck. The project, seen as a catalyst for downtown economic development, failed to move forward because the library board and a majority of the city council favored expanding the library at its current location, 205 East Olive Street. Bowman has served on the board since July 2011 and Buchanan since July 2009, according to Connect Transit. Bowman was the only Connect Transit board member to vote against the rate and route changes on March 26th. Bowman said he was considering serving another term when he received a letter dated March 13th from Renner informing him that he could not be reappointed because of term limits approved by the Bloomington City Council in 2014. Bloomington board and commission members are limited to 3 consecutive 3-year terms or 9 consecutive years of service. Members who meet the limit can be reappointed after a year off. So that was in force on the date that Judy Buchanan was reappointed past her 2nd term, or 8 years already on the board, and allowed to serve up to 12 years, Bowman noted. So the term limit is not being applied equally. Renner's letter also referenced that Bowman had served on the board since 2005. Both Connect Transit officials and Bowman said that date was incorrect. I'm not sure where that date came from or what the intent of that was, said Bowman, adding he did not become a resident of Bloomington until 2010. I do know that there had been some friction between myself and the board chair, Mike McCurdy, said Bowman. 8 years plus another 4 years would put Bowman past that 9-year limit, said Renner Wednesday, when he was asked why he did not reappoint Bowman. Judy also would not be eligible for reappointment. Bloomington Ward 9 Alderwoman Kim Bray questioned whether the 9-year term limit applies to the Transit Board. It's a Bloomington Normal Board, so both entities need to agree to the same term limits and apply them equally, she added. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said he doesn't see a need for term limits to apply to the town's appointees to Connect Transit's board, or other bodies where the town is represented. The people that serve on our boards, as long as they have an interest and are doing good work, I don't see any reason to remove somebody," said Coos. "Connect Transit board members get reappointed every 4 years, so if I or the council feel they're not doing a good job, I have an option for removal." And here is a related story entitled "Coos Holds Off Filling Transit Seat" by Derek Bay. Normal. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said he's holding off on filling a vacant Normal appointment to Connect Transit's board until the air has cleared, and he's not in favor of expanding that body in response to recent criticism. "My timeline is determined by getting the right person on the board. There are a lot of agendas out there making my job difficult right now," Coos told the Pantograph, referring to filling the seat vacated when John Thomas resigned last fall. "There needs to be a clearing of the air and some common understanding, and that doesn't exist right now." Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner, meanwhile, has lined up two appointees who may join the 7-member board this summer, despite community criticism after the board approved fare hikes and a route cut this spring. Critics have pushed for more transit riders, including those who use the Connect Mobility on-demand service, to serve on the board, and Bloomington Alderman Scott Black said that may be achieved through expanding the size of the board. "We would have to look at the bylaws to see if we could add a couple of slots, one that is a Connect Mobility user and one that is a regular user," said Renner. "I don't think that is an unreasonable request to have at least one member of the board represent that viewpoint." Coos prefers to address the issue through regular appointments. "I think it's valid there is stakeholder representation, but expanding the board is not the way to do it," said Coos. "I take it as a discussion at this point." Coos said his appointee won't be former mayoral rival Mark Tiratilli, who threw his hat in the ring last month. "I'm trying to get people that have a broader view and are not coming in with an agenda," said Coos. "But it may be a Connect Transit or Connect Mobility user." He noted Normal appointee Mike McCurdy, the board's chair, is a frequent rider, and appointee Julie Heil works with the transportation industry through her consulting business, the Heil Group. "I'm sensitive to the fact it needs to be somebody who's aware of some of the concerns right now," said Coos. "All those are in play for my choices." Coos said he hopes the situation will be eased by Connect Transit's Connect to the Future Working Group, a new body meeting monthly through the fall to examine the system's problems and identify possible solutions. McCurdy and General Manager Isaac Thorne have said the system needs to raise fares to stay fiscally viable, while critics said that cuts off low-income riders who rely on the bus and those who can least afford it. "A lot of the issues going forward on this, people should give room for this working group to do their work," said Coos. "It may have an effect on when or who I might appoint." Fare hikes are set to start in October and continue for 4 years. The Olive Route will stop running July 1st. The next front page story is headlined, "Rainy Spring May Help Mosquitoes, Ticks Thrive. Experts, Don't Fear Bug Bites, But Take Some Precautions," by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Mosquitoes. Ticks. If you're already starting to itch, you are probably wondering if all our recent rain means a bumper crop of bugs. The good news is you don't have to worry yet. Mosquito populations need at least a week with temperatures above 50 degrees to actually start appearing, said Kelly Alsup, horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension. However, while the temperatures have been dipping into the mid-40s at night recently, Stephen Giuliano, a distinguished professor of ecology at Illinois State University who studies mosquitoes, said, "The cold hasn't been cold enough to knock it back, just slow it down." "In fact, there are indications this could be a very big year," said Giuliano. "I wouldn't be surprised with all of the rain we've had, it's going to be a good year for mosquitoes, or a bad one, depending on how you look at it. Carol Carlton of the Macon County Health Department said, "We say the season is May 15th to October 15th, but the mosquitoes don't know that. And don't forget the ticks, which are already showing up and can carry Lyme disease." They like the moist, cool weather, said Alsup. "Our wet spring is likely to produce lots of lush growth that the ticks enjoy," she warned. Both ticks and mosquitoes can carry diseases. Jill Wallace, environmental educator at Sugar Grove Nature Center at Funk's Grove, said some children in her classes are afraid to go outside when they hear about ticks and other bugs. "I tell them, they're nothing to be afraid of, just something to be aware of," said Wallace. Giuliano said, "Personal protection is the thing you have the most control over." The Illinois Department of Public Health recommends using repellents containing DEET, picaridin, or oil of lemon eucalyptus. "The biggest thing you can do is remove items that hold water," said Tom Anderson, Director of Public Health for the McLean County Health Department. He noted that the Culex pipiens, or house mosquito, which carries West Nile virus, loves stagnant water. It doesn't take much water for mosquitoes to breed. Places where water collects include flower pots, bird baths, dog bowls, and gutters, said Carlton. Other problem areas can be old tires, kiddie pools, and children's toys left outside, such as sand pails, said Anderson. Giuliano said the Asian tiger mosquitoes, once considered a southern variety, can be found in Bloomington Normal, Decatur, Champaign, and Springfield. Jason Probst, field operations manager for the Macon County Mosquito Abatement District, said, "The silver lining from the recent rainy weather is that it gives us an indication of what may be good breeding spots where stagnant water collects." Probst said, "Take care of them now and be aware of them later." Giuliano is in the midst of a multi-year study on strategies for mosquito control. One thing he has found during the research is that if you kill a certain percentage of larvae, but not all of them, those that survive will be higher quality survivors, said Giuliano. He has compared it to what happens if you plant seeds and the number that sprout are so numerous that they crowd each other out, competing for resources. But if you thin them out, the surviving plants grow bigger and stronger. Different species in different locations have different responses, and Giuliano and his team of researchers are trying to help those involved in mosquito control with information to refine their methods of attack. For now, entities such as the Macon County Mosquito Abatement District use what Probst called an integrated pest management approach. That starts with educating people to get rid of potential breeding areas. "The most work we're engaged in is larval control," said Probst. "They're captive. They're not going anywhere." The district uses a larvicide called BTI that's a naturally occurring bacteria that is not harmful to other aquatic life, he said. For mosquitoes in the pupal state, the district uses a larvicidal oil called Cocobear. BTI is also available for residential use in places such as ornamental ponds and rain barrels, which cannot be emptied out or turned over every week. When mosquitoes in traps test positive for mosquitoes, or when there is a lot of rain in warmer weather that would prompt nuisance mosquitoes to hatch, the district uses an ultra-low-volume sprayer fogger with permethrin to go after adult mosquitoes, he said. The substance is water-based, and about a half cup of the active ingredient covers an area the size of 2 football fields, said Probst. McLean County does not have a mosquito abatement district, but several communities are involved in mosquito control, said Anderson. The McLean County Health Department has mosquito traps throughout the county, which it checks twice a week. The batches of mosquitoes are tested for West Nile virus. Last year, 176 human cases of West Nile virus were reported in Illinois, resulting in 17 deaths. And a sidebar to this article tells us how to battle bugs. Illinois Department of Public Health and Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention offer the following tips for avoiding bug bites. Repair screens to keep mosquitoes and other insects out of your house. Remove standing water. Limit your time outdoors around dawn or dusk. Hike in the center of trails to limit exposure to ticks. Use repellents containing 20% to 30% DEET, picaridin, or oil of lemon eucalyptus. Do not use insect repellent on babies younger than 2 months, and do not use products with oil of lemon eucalyptus on children under age 3. Wear long pants, long-sleeved shirts, and a hat. Check your body for ticks after being outdoors in potentially tick-infested areas. Treat clothing, shoes, and camping gear with permethrin, but do not use permethrin on your body. A related story is entitled "Public May Help Bug Research" by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. You don't need to be a helpless bystander in the battle against diseases spread by mosquitoes and ticks. There are ways to protect yourself and your community and help researchers. You can be a citizen scientist by taking part in the Illinois Tick Inventory Collaboration Network, called ITIC, a project involving the Illinois Natural History Survey, University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, Illinois Department of Public Health, and Midwest Center of Excellence for Vector-Borne Diseases. You also can report dead birds to your local health department. The Illinois Department of Public Health, www.dph.illinois.gov/topics-services/diseases-and-conditions/west-nile-virus, has details under the Bird Collection tab. Tom Anderson, Director of Environmental Health for the McLean County Health Department, said, "You can contact the department if you see a sick bird with signs of West Nile virus. Usually, they will stupor around like it's drunk," he said. Leanne Lyons, an ITIC coordinator, said researchers are looking for people involved in work or hobbies outside to collect ticks they find on themselves and turn them in with information on where they were. Entering its second year, the goal of the project is to set up a network across the state to provide information on what ticks are found where. Currently, there are hubs in nearly 50 counties where people can get an ITIC kit. Sugar Grove Nature Center near Funk's Grove is one of the hubs. There also are hubs in Tazewell, DeWitt, and Piatt counties. "We're still trying to find a good hub in Macon County," said Lyons. The kits include tweezers, 5 vials, instructions, and a data collection form to record information such as the date and place where ticks were collected, how many, and whether repellent was used. In its first year, the project distributed 1,000 kits, and about one-third were returned. "We were pretty amazed by how much we learned," said Lyons. The kits provided information to change the status of the Lone Star tick in 33 counties, the dog tick in 24 counties, and the black-legged or deer tick in 4 counties, from not found to found or found to established, she said. The deer tick is the one that carries Lyme disease. "It's okay to use insect repellent while using the kit. In fact, it is encouraged. We don't want to put anyone at risk," she said. "Our whole purpose is to reduce the spread of disease, not increase it." The next story is entitled "Zimmerman Files Sealed. Judge Denies Media Request, Says Police Records Not in Trial," by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A judge has permanently sealed information discovered by Bloomington police during their investigation into the shooting death of Pam Zimmerman. Earlier, Judge Scott Drazewski had decided to keep the material sealed until the conclusion of Kirk Zimmerman's murder trial. A McLean County jury acquitted Zimmerman last week of killing his former wife in November 2014. In October 2016, defense lawyer John Rogers asked to file two motions under seal. The motions sought to bar introducing as evidence sensitive, private, and/or inflammatory information about Kirk Zimmerman and others. The Pantograph, WGLT, and the Illinois Press Association appealed Drazewski's initial decision to keep the material sealed until after jury selection. The Fourth District Appellate Court and the Illinois Supreme Court supported the judge's decision. The defense renewed its opposition, arguing jurors could hear about the information from media reports. The judge delayed a decision until the trial ended. In a four-page ruling, Drazewski noted the documents were provided to the defense by the state during the pretrial discovery process, and the state did not use the material during trial. The information might become a vehicle for improper purposes, said the ruling, issued Tuesday. Some material would be embarrassing and an invasion of privacy to non-party individuals, according to the decision. The jury deliberated about 7.5 hours over 2 days before returning the not guilty verdict against Kirk Zimmerman, 60, of Bloomington. During the 5-week trial, the state contended a dispute over money was behind the slaying. The defense denied Zimmerman killed his former wife over what amounted to about $4,000 in child support. Here's a story entitled, Health Officials Say Clinton Teen May Have Mumps, by Paul Sweech. Clinton. A Clinton High School student has a possible case of the mumps, leading school officials to send a letter to parents and guardians on Wednesday, informing them about the rare and contagious disease. Clinton School Superintendent Kurt Nettles told the Pantograph the letter went out at the recommendation of the DeWitt, Piatt, Bi-County Health Department. We follow the health department protocol, and they recommend notifying parents of a possible case so everyone has the factual information, Nettles said. Nettles declined to give the condition of the student. There are no known cases of mumps in McLean County, said Amanda McCambridge of the McLean County Health Department. Mumps is a contagious disease caused by a virus, but it is not common among children who are up to date with their vaccinations. I don't know our vaccination rate, but it's extremely high, Nettles said. We're very nearly 100% all the time. We're going to follow the advice of our health department to keep our parents informed and our students as safe as possible, he said. The best way to prevent mumps is to make sure children are current with their vaccinations, the school said in the letter to parents. Children receive at least one dose of a mumps vaccine on or after their first birthday, and a second dose at 4 to 6 years old. Parents who aren't sure about whether their child has received the vaccine should contact their child's primary care provider. Mumps is rare, although there have been outbreaks in recent years. 5 McLean County residents had confirmed cases of mumps in June 2017. Nittles said, in his 28 years in education, there has never been a mumps case in a district where he has served. Because mumps is spread by direct contact with respiratory droplets, people can reduce their risk by covering their nose and mouth when they cough or sneeze, washing their hands frequently with water and soap, not sharing eating and drinking utensils, and avoiding close contact with people who are sick. Symptoms include fever, headache, muscle aches, swollen salivary glands, and malaise. Serious cases also can include swollen testicles in males and swollen ovaries in females, and inflammation of the joints for several days. Anyone who experiences symptoms should stay home for at least 5 days and call their health care provider. The next article is entitled, Juveniles Robbery Trial Ends in Mistrial, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A mistrial was called Wednesday after a jury could not reach a verdict in the trial of a normal teen charged with aggravated robbery. The jury deliberated about 4 hours before informing Associate Judge Brian Goldrick they were unable to reach a unanimous decision on charges accusing a 17-year-old of robbing a Hayworth woman during an incident in March. The jury trial was held in juvenile court. Jurors were not told the defendant was underage. The Pantograph does not name juvenile charged with offenses. The state's attorney's office will make a determination on whether to try the case a second time. In his closing argument Wednesday, defense lawyer Art Feldman asked jurors to scrutinize the credibility of Lindsay Hawkey, the 20-year-old alleged victim. Hawkey testified Tuesday that the teen she had met through Snapchat asked her for a ride to Chicago Heights. The minor brought 19-year-old Kermondre King along on the car ride, said the woman. King faces armed robbery charges related to the incident. Hawkey told police she was threatened by the men whom she believed to be armed after they returned to normal. She said she refused their request to be taken to Peoria, a request that came with an offer of $15,000. The woman testified she was hit by King and the two forced her out of her car. The car was found a block away. "You heard a lot of things that don't make any sense," Feldman told jurors. No gun was found, but an airsoft gun was located by police in the suspect's home. In her remarks, Assistant State's Attorney Samantha Vasquez said the woman picked the juvenile photos from a police lineup and described the clothes he was wearing. The teen put the woman in a potentially perilous situation, said the prosecutor. And here's a story entitled, "Normal Store Robbed, Two Men Saw It," by Kevin Barlow. Normal. Police are looking for two men who robbed an auto parts store in Northeast Normal Tuesday night. Normal Assistant Police Chief Eric Klingley said police were notified of the armed robbery at O'Reilly Auto Parts at 401 Greenbrier Drive around 9:30 p.m. Tuesday. The suspects appear to be two black males wearing dark clothes with hoodies covering their heads, Klingley said. They displayed a gun and took cash. There are no available photographs or video of the robbery, he added. Authorities are investigating to see if there is a link to previous unsolved robberies in the Twin Cities. On May 8th, Bloomington police investigated a robbery of Casey's General Store in the 3000 block of Gill Street by two suspects described as black men wearing masks, hoods, and gloves. It is tough to tell since we don't have any footage, but it is quite possible that this could be linked to other cases in Bloomington, and we will be touching base with them to compare notes, said Klingley. The armed robbery Tuesday night was at least the 10th armed robbery reported in the Twin Cities this year and the 4th in the last month. At 8:30 a.m. on April 18th, police were called to the Subway restaurant at 2310 East Oakland Avenue, where two men entered the business, went into a restricted employee-only area, displayed a knife, and demanded money. The first suspect is described as a heavyset black man in his mid-20s or early 30s. He wore a dark hoodie and dark track pants with a red stripe down the legs and black shoes and a reflective construction vest. The second suspect is described as a black man of average build, also in his late 20s or early 30s, with partial facial hair. He wore a dark hoodie, dark pants, and dark gloves with a black and gray backpack, a reflective safety vest, and possibly safety glasses. At 1:50 p.m. on April 29th, police were called to Six Points Food and Liquor at Morris Avenue and Six Points Road. Those two suspects are described as black men between 30 and 35 years of age. Both wore black clothing with their faces partially covered. One suspect was wearing glasses or goggles and had facial hair. One of the suspects was armed with a gun. They demanded money from a store employee. The suspects left on foot with an undisclosed amount of cash. At 7:30 p.m. on May 3rd, Boost Mobile, 603 South Center Street, just south of downtown Bloomington, was robbed. An employee described the robbers as three men wearing masks and said two of them displayed guns. An undisclosed number of phones were taken from the store and the suspects fled in an unknown vehicle, police said Saturday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for May 16th. Please stay tuned.